So let's kick off with that big HSBC story that I mentioned just a minute ago. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line now by Daniel Thomas, who's the Deputy Companies Editor at the FT. Daniel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ed.
So, yes, as I said, HSBC profits down 62%. That's the headline profit figure. Adjusted profits much better, down just 1%, but the shares are still down a long way. So why doesn't the market like about what doesn't the market like about this this full-year announcement?
Gosh, Ed, I think pretty much everything about it is not great. As you said, on an adjusted basis, it looks just about okay. But on a net profit basis, down 82%. You know, net loss widened from 4.2 billion to 4.2 billion from 1.3 billion in the last quarter. They're saying that annual profits slumped owing to what they call a year of unexpected economic and political events. And they're warning of risks in 2017 going forward, again related to the global economy and the global political situation. I mean, it was this dreaded sort of volatile financial market conditions in HSBC's statement, which gets quite a lot of analysts angered. Really, it's a sort of way of saying, you know, it wasn't us, Gov. It's the market. It's not us. It's the election. It feels a little bit finger-pointing for a company which fundamentally and basically is not growing its revenues, you know, across major parts of its business. That is the major problem here. The bank should be growing, and it's not. And that's why people are most disappointed. It feels a bit of a flat excuse, really, for a bank which ultimately has disappointed across the board on this one.
So it's not growing, and it's blaming economic circumstances for that lack of growth.
Exactly right. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong. It's, at the same time, it's up to the bank to sort itself out and to take it forward. The bank said it would buy back $1 billion worth of shares in the first half of the year, news which you'd have thought shareholders would welcome. But at the same time, this is less than the 2.5 billion last year. And it missed analyst expectations. Deutsche Bank and UBS thought that there would be up to $3 billion worth of buybacks in 2017. So again, that's disappointed investors. And that $1 billion of buybacks is now worth 7% less after these results.
And they're maintaining the dividend, though, aren't they? They're maintaining the dividend, aren't they?
They are, and there's a question over that, really. I mean, why are they maintaining the dividend if things are going quite badly? They could be using this money to bolster its balance sheet, arguably, which is in part reflecting the low level of buybacks. I mean, the thing is, they have to do more around their business, particularly in Europe, which seems to have struggled. The Asian unit seems to be a bit more steady, pre-tax profit dipping a mere 12.5%. Mostly because of one-off items, and this is perhaps why you've seen Stuart Gulliver today saying that, you know, the company is looking to redeploy more of its assets into these faster-growing markets. At the moment, it doesn't seem to be fast enough. He admits it's not fast enough, and the bank needs to do more.
I mean, what's happened to the share price as well? Is it down around about 6% the last time I looked?
A bit over seven now, actually. So, the market really has reacted badly to these numbers.
Okay, well, let's move on to Anglo American. They've got some full-year results. Of course, they're a big mining giant. They've come back into the black, back into profit, and adjusted earnings up around 170%. So a year ago, Anglo American was in deep trouble with way too much debt. Do these results mean it's fully recovered?
Well, I think Anglo, like many of its peers, have really benefited on the back of circumstances out of its keeping, which is the commodity price rise. On the back of commodity prices going up, Anglo itself has done very well and effectively been bailed out. It announced last year a shrink-to-survive plan, as it was described, and now it's able to turn around and say that it does not need to do that anymore because of the rising commodity prices, and on the back of that, you know, the swing back to profits. To be fair to Anglo, they did a better than expected performance, according to analysts, the rising commodity prices we knew about. So really, the company is doing well, even with that as the backdrop. Its cost cutting, its operations is doing fairly good things, and with prices of raw materials going up, it looks pretty well set for the future as well. I think going forward, I mean, you do have to ask about the restructuring, though. I mean, many of the analysts were suggesting that the need to restructure its business was not just about debt reduction, it was also strategic. Notably, that it's got a fairly large exposure to South Africa, which is in the midst of changing ownership rules, which could, in the fullness of time, do bad things to its business. But so, I mean, I think there'll still be questions about why it's not continuing to do that in the future.
So it's a question, really. It feels to me that a year ago they were selling assets when prices were really, really low, and now prices have picked up. They don't want to sell any more assets. It sounds, in the end, rather bad timing.
Well, it's as simple as that. I mean, they were forced into the prices were low. They were forced into action, and now the prices are rising again. They're sitting on a nice little profit. So really, it's a company which tracks the commodity prices. And if you've got some sort of conviction that prices of many of its areas, and it was focusing on just three, which were copper, diamonds, and platinum, if you think those commodities are going to do well in the next year or so, then on the back of that, Anglo can't be a bad bet.
Okay, sticking with mining, we also had some first half results from BHP Billiton. What caught your eye there?
The company swung back to profits in the 6 months to the year end and has given a higher than expected interim dividend. It reported a net profit of $3.2 billion against a loss of $5.7 billion. These are big numbers, and again reflecting this resurgence in commodity prices, and again the company is showing some sort of recovery over the various write-offs from last year, and also the in the wake of this fatal accident which happened at a joint venture in Brazil. So BHP is joining its rivals like Rio Tinto in hiking dividends and sort of putting out some pretty good numbers. I guess the worry for me, at least looking at the commodities market in particular with BHP, is the iron ore market, which the company admits is likely to come under some pressure in the short term from lower Chinese steel demand, as well as higher inventories. So going forward, there is a question mark about iron ore as the inevitable warnings over geopolitical concern and protectionism, which could inhibit its business going to the next year. So in the short term, at least, I think there'll be some worries.
Okay, then we've got Wood Group, an oil services firm. They've got some full year results out. What was in there?
This is a different sort of story. I mean, the revenue missed, a bit of a soft warning in the guidance as well. It said it generated about $5 billion of revenue in the full year of 2016, down about 16% from last year, and most strikingly about 4% below consensus. Better news was EBITDA. The earnings were down 23%, but at the same time, that was due to restructuring costs and broadly in line with consensus. Looking at this company, you've got to raise questions about the oil and gas market going forward. The challenging market, very competitive, and only some modest recovery coming through in the U.S. onshore and greenfield offshore projects. So I think it's going to be a little bit shaky for a bit, but I think you can be quite confident that the worst of the downturn seems to be behind it, and there doesn't seem to be any significant restructuring going forward. So if you can believe in the restructuring, your organization, which seems to have worked out pretty well, the sustainable overhead savings, the business seems relatively well set for the longer term.
Well, let's look at Uber. So they've recruited former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder to investigate claims of sexual harassment at the firm. So what are the claims that have sparked this investigation, and how big a problem is this for Uber?
Oh, it's a huge problem. Uber is one of those companies which is its fortunes rest on the flick of a thumb. You know, your app on your phone can be deleted in a second, and Uber knows that. When the chief executive of Uber was linked to Trump, it saw millions of people come off its services in reaction to that, and so it is literally that volatile as a service. Now today we've seen the company really struggle to contain the fallout from its handling of this sexual harassment complaint made by a former engineer called Susan Fowler. It actually happened on Sunday in the last 48 hours. You saw a huge wave of response from the company, successive investigations from different people, including the former U.S. Attorney General, which shows how seriously they're taking this. This is a very damaging thing for Uber and potentially more damaging for Silicon Valley, which is constantly under attack for misogynistic work environments. Uber has become this byword for the what they call the bro-grammar culture of misogyny and the win-at-all-costs aggressiveness, which really represents the other side of the Valley's success. Clearly, Uber and Travis, the CEO, described their claims as abhorrent and against everything they believe in. So they say they're taking it very seriously and will look to address these allegations. At the same time, the reputation of Uber is not helped by these sort of claims.
Really quickly, just 30 seconds on Intercontinental. What was in their full year results, Daniel?
Well, The Intercontinental, it's a company blaming the usual lineup of Brexit, Trump, oil prices for some not great results, and throwing in terrorism for good measure. Again, one of these other companies which is sort of like, well, it's not us, it's the market and the politics. The good news is it will return $400 million to investors in a special dividend, which comes in spite of this slowdown in the global hotel market. It sort of says that, you know, there's GDP growth, disposable income, low-cost airlines. Digitalization could help things keep ticking along, but ultimately the U.S. hotel industry in particular seems to be entering a cyclical downturn sector, exacerbated by these digital startups like Airbnb.
Okay.
So a slight problem for the company there.
Daniel Thomas, Deputy Companies Editor at the FT, thanks very much for joining me this lunchtime.